Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily podcast. I'm John Connolly and I'm joined today by Sienna Rogers, the editor of Labourlist, and our own Katie Balls, deputy political editor of The Spectator. Now, they're joining me today for a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. We'll be discussing all things Labour and what's been going on this week. Now, there's been quite a lot of movement, especially around the top of Labour at the moment in the leader's office, and it was sort of announced or revealed that Corbyn's long-time chief of staff, who's very loyal to him, has been moved out of the leader's office to work on elections. Now, Sienna, what do you think is happening here? What's going on behind the scenes? Who's benefiting from this move, do you think?
So, Carrie Murphy, as you said, is retaining her job title. So in order to smooth over this transition, all three of the staffers are retaining their job titles. So the chief of staff, but as well Amy Jackson, his political director, Jeremy's, and also Joe Bradley, acts as a liaison between trade unions and the Labour Party. So they're all going to work from Southside from now on, so Labour HQ rather than Lotta at the parliamentary office. And of course, the Labour line was, this is a coup, because Carrie Murphy worked on election prep last time from Southside. This is totally normal and also something, you know, to be celebrated. But of course, there are lots of suspicions that actually this is a manifestation of the tensions that we've seen within Lotto. So Carrie Murphy is definitely a kind of unite woman, just as Jenny Formby was as well. And she definitely is more aligned to, you know, wanting a general election, certainly before a second referendum, and being basically quite sceptical about backing Remain immediately. You know, all those kind of controversial issues that we've seen play out recently, she's on that side of things. So there's some suspicions there that it's to do with that.
Yeah, we'll see. And Katie, do you think this is linked? We saw a few weeks ago that there was another sort of high-profile departure from Corbyn's office with Andrew Fisher leaving. Do you think we're sort of seeing a link-up there, or is it completely separate?
Well, I think if you look at Andrew Fisher's note, which has now made its way into the public sphere in full, his resignation note, I think it was on one of the pro-Corbyn sites, then disappeared, but not before others saw it. He talks about various figures in the leader's office who I think he thought was disruptive to the cause. He lists various, I suppose, not quite infighting, but when he thought time should be spent focusing on pushing a policy agenda, and instead, you know, you saw leaks in various places. He talks about class war. I don't think Carrie Murphy's necessarily in the class war, but there was definitely a sense when the Andrew Fisher news broke up that there were divisive figures around Jeremy Corbyn, Seamus Milne being one of them, and Carrie Murphy being another one, which just, I don't think he's universally liked by everyone in the Labour Party would perhaps be a kind way of putting it. But I think she is a divisive character, and also quite abrasive, you hear from various people. So I think that lots of people say, oh, Jeremy Corbyn is now in a weaker position. I think how weak, really? I mean, I don't think people expect him to be pushed out before a general election, but people think he is loosening his grip to a degree. And I think that meant that there has been an appetite for him to have people around him who do listen to various members of the shadow cabinet, the PLP, you know, other figures in Labour HQ. So I think you can see it in the sphere of people who were very close to Corbyn, who are seen as being disruptive by others.
And Sienna, how are Momentum and other sort of parts of the Labour Party on the more left side of the Labour Party fitting into this? Are you generally still supportive of the move of Carrie to go out, or the total opposite?
Well, there's something that has been kind of bubbling under the surface for a while now, which are these perceived tensions between Lotto Corbyn's office and McDonnell and McDonnell's office, even though, you know, Jeremy's son, Seb, works in McDonnell's office. And there are those links and, you know, they've been friends for a long time, they're political allies, all of that is. But so many people on the left, and this, particularly today, it's kind of come out even more that lots of members are very suspicious, basically, about these tensions and kind of asking whether John McDonnell is undermining Corbyn's position on a variety of things, particularly Brexit, of course, because he has been the person who has been having meetings with the People's Vote campaign, for instance, for quite a while now, and was instrumental, along with Diane Abbott, for pushing for that to become official Labour Party policy. So, you know, there was criticism today. There was this Alistair Campbell interview came out with John McDonnell, and he actually McDonnell did reveal a number of things in that interview, which was, it's quite interesting, just the fact that he would choose to do that interview is something that people...
A controversial interviewer as well.
Exactly. That people are very suspicious of on the left already. But then the fact that he said in it that he supported Alistair Campbell returning to the Labour Party as a member, the fact that he kind of acknowledged that quite a lot of Labour MPs, people in Parliament, as he said, were sceptical about having an election before referendum. So various things like that have been picked up by the Labour left now, and they're kind of, it more and more, it seems like perhaps, if not Corbyn himself, but Corbyn's supporters are going to attack McDonnell, basically. And that we've seen that from Squawk Box and that Andrew Fisher memo leaking.
That's full circle. And going back to Brexit, Katie, I think, do you think this is sort of the biggest rift we've seen so far with those on the, you know, pushing for the party to drop to very much a Remain position compared with Corbyn?
Well, look, I think the big fight at Labour conference, which is very well documented, was whether or not the party should be explicitly pro-Remain. It was really a fairly big shift, I thought, from where the party originally started, that it's now official policy to have a second referendum. But some who wanted to go the whole hog. In the end, a very touch-and-go vote, they decided not to do that. I think now that battleground for the time being is to one side. The next battleground is what comes first in terms of, you know, looking ahead. We are expecting to know in the next week or so if the party, if we expect to know in the next week or so if the government is going to get an extension, whether it's forced on them or requested, or given what's currently happening, if there's a small chance that there's actually a Brexit deal and if that's passed. But there are some who, well, a growing number in the Labour Party, who think the party would be best suited to having a second referendum before a general election. Now, some of the people pushing that have been pushing it for a very long time, and that's because they ultimately see stopping Brexit as the most important thing. Figures around Jeremy Corbyn and a lot of Labour MPs see having a Labour government as the most important thing. Once you have a Labour government, in theory, you can do lots of things, including stop Brexit if you so wish. But looking at the polls and looking at the fact the Tories are so far ahead, there are several polls, and I do think Labour's doing slightly better the past week, where you have the Lib Dems and Labour on really similar numbers. I think that is meaning that some people who weren't traditionally in the second referendum first camp now actually think, well, my seat has a small majority, am I better advised to actually push for the second referendum, go through that process? It's basically Labour policy anyway to have a second referendum. Yeah. It's not going that much further. And then hope in the meantime of having that the Tories move much further back in the polls and you stop Brexit and get to keep your seat. So I think there's a growing view there. And I think what was interesting about that GQ interview is there were some really eye-catching comments such as, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's going to resign. News to him, I expect, if he loses the next election. But also talking about the fact that Alistair Campbell asked John McDonnell, do you agree with me? Quite clearly, he was not like to say yes, but do you agree with me that we shouldn't have an election next? It should be a second referendum. Now, John McDonnell plays enough to the party line by saying, you know, my preference is what we said many times, which is a general election. But he completely paves the way for potentially, you know, supporting other MPs, saying he understands that argument. And let's look where the numbers in Parliament are and look what's going to wear it. And I think there is a bit of a pattern, if you speak to various, you know, Labour staffers, of John McDonnell almost seeming to ad lib in an interview by going a bit further than the position, but they actually believe it's actually quite carefully crafted.
It happened for a long time with another referendum becoming policy as well. It was the same sort of pattern.
Exactly. So he says it in an interview, and then I think there are very few now who just believe, oh, he just got carried away, it was a slip of the tongue. It's quite carefully pointed. And if you look, I think, where people like Emily Thornberry would be, members of the cabinet who are much more, you know, were first out of the blocks when it came to the second referendum, you do get the sense that in the coming weeks, and Sienna will know more than me, you might seem to get this bigger push, this bigger pressure on Jeremy Corbyn to consider a second referendum first. Because you do need Labour votes to get through a general election if you look at the Fixed Term Parliament Act. I still think, speaking to Jeremy Corbyn allies, that Jeremy Corbyn's preference, and we've seen this week, is to have the Tories basically forced to get this extension, and then immediately after that is secured, call a confidence vote, bring down the government, and then have a general election. I think that is their plan A.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn made a big pre-election speech this week, talking about all the radical policies that Labour agreed at conference and have been developing since then, and all the kind of main manifesto policies that are going to be really important in that election, and completely making it clear that Corbyn's position is absolutely whatever lots of Labour MPs are saying about preferring a referendum first, that his position is firmly election first, and that's the priority.
And I guess if there is a confidence vote, I think even Labour moderates who want a second referendum first, for example, would have to sort of rein in and vote for a general election. Is that your feeling?
I mean, even since the very beginning of September, which feels like an awful long time ago now, but even since then, Labour MPs who people would think of as Corbynites were saying that they would defy the whip to vote against a general election. They felt that strongly about it, and that is only growing as a feeling in the parliamentary Labour Party.
That'd be very interesting. And so, Katie, you touched on before as well, you know, the fact that John McDonnell also announced the departure, the potential departure of the Labour leader, saying that if the Labour Party lost the next election, both of them would stand down. I mean, that's quite unusual. And you mentioned that John McDonnell doesn't ad-lib much and it's all quite carefully planned. What do you think the thinking of it behind that is?
To be honest, I'm purely speculating, so I apologise to you here that I haven't had anyone since there that make sense of it to me. But I did think there was some coherence there, because if you look at his comments that he made along with that, he was talking about how the next leader needed to be a woman, and that's something he has said before. Now, I slightly take it with a pinch of salt when John McDonnell says the next leader needs to be a woman, because I still think there are plenty of people who think he has his eyes on being the next leader of the Labour Party. Mm. And there are people in the Labour Party say, well, actually, no, John's accepted that he will never be the leader, but he wants to get a, you know, a female leader who would keep him as, you know, shadow chancellor and eventually chancellor. But I think given the number of times he's previously gone for it, I don't think it harms him to look as though he's trying to, you know, move his party on and get his first female leader. And then I guess just see what happens. I mean, you talk about who might be the successor. I definitely think that there's a lot of talk since Labour conference when they failed to remove Tom Watson as deputy leader, but they did manage to change the rules in terms of interim leaders. So if Jeremy Corbyn, you know, steps down, or as Jeremy Corbyn himself put it on the march, has an unfortunate accident involving a bus, you have a situation where it would be the National Executive Committee that would get a say over who stepped in before the leadership contest. And I think people are looking ahead to what candidates they would have to go up against people probably like Keir Starmer, to go up people against Emily Thornberry, who I don't get the impression is the Corbynist's choice.
Absolutely not. In fact, there was a lot of criticism in the McDonnell interview today. So Alice Campbell threw out a couple of names. He said Emily Thornberry and someone else, can't remember who. And McDonnell said, oh yeah, yeah, I mean, there's those great women such as Angela Rayner. And there's actually quite a lot of people who are pissed off that he said Angela Rayner rather than Laura Pidcock, who is the favoured left person.
Yeah, and I noticed that too at conference, Laura Pidcock was the name I kept hearing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, talking about who would be most in line with the, you know, continuing the Corbyn discipline or the Corbyn way of looking at things. But I sense that perhaps John McDonnell would get behind someone like that. But personally, I think there's always a chance that, say, that didn't work out because the candidate just couldn't quite keep up the pace in the various rounds. He'd be led to step in. And we had an interesting piece on Coffee House recently from James Johnson, who's done polling under Theresa May. When Theresa May there, he worked in Number 10 doing polling. And he was saying that they continually found from their polling that the person they feared the most actually going up against was John McDonnell. They found that in, I think, focus groups, he fared quite well in terms of voters. So I think that kind of thing won't go unnoticed.
He certainly kind of, he actually talked about this in the interview, how he's changed his media image. He was quite open about that. And, you know, his chintzy curtains and his cuddly red jumper on the Sunday shows, almost every week he appears there and is doing very well with those media performances. I mean, I'm not as cynical as you are in terms of him actually, you know, wanting to take over or anything. I think he has his kind of what people refer to as his protege, Rebecca Long Bailey, is another left option who is likely to perhaps get the endorsement of Unite, which is always incredibly important.
Right.
And I also do think on John McDonnell, if you look at the debates on language that I've been having in the Commons recently, I think one of the things that perhaps he's aware of too, which make it very difficult for him to get that far, is the fact that he has actually talked about lynching, not himself, but talked about the idea of a cabinet minister being lynched. He's tried to row back on it, but there's a recording, and I do think it's the kind of thing it would be hard if you go for such a high level of office, and he is going for chancellor right now, but I think it would just come up in the leadership election again and again.
And Sienna, it's, the developments this week have been, I guess, especially good for Labour moderates. I mean, we touched on Tom Watson there. I mean, is this sort of their wildest dreams coming true in a way, in the fact that we've got like a huge standard bearer in John McDonnell now pushing towards Remain and, you know, taking over some of the party structures or people around him?
Certainly, there's quite positive feeling at the moment in terms of where we're at on Brexit. Yes, they lost the Remain vote, which is mostly kind of pushed for by moderates, as they're called, as well as the Labour left. But also, there's lots of other victories. So trigger ballots, actually, they're not going badly at all for the sitting MPs who are seeking re-selection. There are so many who expected to be under threat, and actually, they've mostly just flied through those votes. I mean, there are some exceptions, but that's so Margaret Hodge, Diana Johnson, but actually those are very kind of local issues. And that was about actually their supporters, or who you would expect to be their supporters, not turning out to meetings. And it wasn't kind of some big nationally orchestrated move at all.
I mean, why do you think that number is so low, actually? Is it that they're more popular in their sort of local constituencies than thought, or is it more that the machinery to get a trigger ballot was a bit more complicated than people thought?
I think it's a number of things. So surprisingly, unions just haven't been pushing for people to be triggered at all. I mean, we just haven't seen that. So they've kind of been out of the game totally. And it's actually about what local parties have been voting for. And I think over the summer, there was a huge push from Corbyn sceptic groups like Labour First, basically helping to MPs to strategise for these votes and to, you know, they weren't going to Parliament. Lots of them didn't go to conference. They were staying in their constituencies and organising really hard.
And Sienna, how are Labour getting on with selecting candidates for the next election?
Well, it's really interesting development, actually, because Labour's ruling body, the people at the very top of it, of the National Executive Committee, the NEC, they've decided that the selection process they're going ahead with is much shorter, so that it will be taking place over just 7 days. These processes usually take 9 weeks, and that members won't have a say in the first two stages of the local processes. So in terms of selecting their candidates, the NEC will get to establish the long list and also draw up the short list with consultation with some other representatives, like local representatives. So that's kind of angered quite a lot of members, but also it's really interesting in terms of how it's going to shape what the PLP looks like after a general election if Labour does well.
So it's a lot of top-down control, basically, to select the kind of candidates they want, is that right?
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that both Jeremy Corbyn and Tom Watson argued against that at this meeting, and they were both overruled because the rest of the officers group is made up of union representatives usually, and you know, a cynic might say that unions would quite like to get their own people into those seats. So perhaps a little bit of control over those processes is quite useful.
Oh, brilliant. So extra factions warring among each other. Glad to know them as well. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Sienna. And thank you for listening.